The following previews are of graphic audio productions rated for mature audiences due to scenes of intense violence and sexual situations.
For the legendary mountain man preacher, times are lean. Trapping is a thing of the past. Only a handful of men cling to the old ways, trading pelts to a market with little demand. Thus it is that Preacher, along with his old friends Three Sleeps Norris and Antoine Revier, grudgingly accepts a commission from the War Department to act as trail guide and scout for a regiment of dragoons.
You're a scruffy-looking lot, I must say. Do you ever take baths? You'll have to in this army.
Pardon me, Colonel, but we ain't in this army. We're just hired to guide you to where you want to go in the Big Empty.
Yes. Well, from now on, until the completion of your employment, you will all refrain from spirits, liquor of any sort, and you will clean up your clothing and present a well-washed appearance at all times.
Now, whoa up there, Second Colonel. Exactly who are to be the guides for this expedition?
Why, you three, of course.
Well, then, don't the Colonel think that the men in charge should have some say in how the soldier boys will march?
Regulations cover that quite nicely, I believe.
Ain't no regulation out there in the high lonesome.
Preacher's words will ring prophetically true, for in the Wyoming wild, Blackfoot, Sioux, Cheyenne, Arapaho, and Kiowa warriors have joined forces to prepare for battle, their bloodlust stirred by a legendary Blackfoot Messiah.
The day is coming soon when the white man will fall to the earth like rain in the spring. When you have finished the ritual of Iron Shirt, you will be stronger than any bullet.
You say the white man's bullets cannot harm you, Iron Shirt. Prove it, and we will follow you.
I ask Bent Trees to step to the far side of the fire. Take your gun in hand and point it at my chest. When I say so, shoot me. Now, Bent Trees. You will be shown the secret of this medicine when you complete the ritual to become part of my Iron Shield Strongheart Society. Death to all White Eyes!
With the spirited Dragoon Squadron for cover, Preacher will forge up the blood-drenched Santa Fe Trail. But the only way to win this war is to stop the hell-raising Messiah, whose godforsaken message is leading to the ultimate showdown, the battle for Fort Washington.
Get that cannon moving! Fire!
Shoot them all!
Don't miss this epic tale of frontier battle. The first Mountain Man 7, Blackfoot Messiah.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
Desee! It has withdrawn!
Withdrawn?
It has receded!
Tsunami! It's a tsunami!
Working on a dig on the southern coast of India, the last thing Anya Creed expects is to be hit by a tsunami or to strike archaeological gold.
Hey! Look what I found!
Let me see that. It appears to be a mechanism of some sort.
Is it gold?
I believe so, yes.
Anya watched as Lochata's fingers found the hidden release inside the egg-shaped device. The device split open like the sections of an orange to reveal the figurine inside. It was a woman, at least from the waist up, but below the waist, she was a snake. Anya is driven to discover the source of the relics at the bottom of the sea. Unfortunately, she isn't the only one interested in the mysterious artifacts.
Where is Anya Creed? If someone does not tell me where this woman is, I'm going to set your ship on fire and kill every person aboard it!
I'm here.
Miss Creed.
I am Rajiv Shivaji.
Do you still have the figurines?
No.
I don't believe you. Do you really want me to kill all those people because you like me?
No.
Master Rajiv! Look! It's the Coast Guard!
They've underestimated me, Miss Creed, and they're about to pay for that.
Taken hostage by the pirate Shivaji, Anya finds herself on a river deep in the Indian jungle.
You know about Kumarikam Dam?
It was a mythical kingdom out in the Indian Ocean.
Not mythical. Once it was very real. A proud and fierce people lived there for a long time, and they amassed a vast fortune. As the island began to sink, the people abandoned their city and fled to the mainland. They took the contents of the treasure room with them.
There!
There! Men! Put to shore!
We must find a throne room. That's where the treasure is supposed to be kept.
But the deserted ruin isn't deserted, and the residents don't like strangers. Rogue Angel number 10, Serpent's Kiss.
Available now from Graphic Audio.
And now, for our feature presentation. Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents William W. Johnstone's Blood Bond. Narrated by Thomas Penny. With performances by Dylan Lynch, James Lewis, Kate Torrey, Jeff Baker, Terrence Aselford, David Coyne, James Konacek, Sonny Lasky, Eric Messner, Colleen Delaney, Ken Jackson, Andy Clements, Tim Carlin, Christopher Graybill, Michael John Casey, Richard Rowan, Karen Carbone, Nanette Savard, Bobby Aselford, Nathaniel Perry, and Mort Shelby. Blood Bond number 11, Texas Gundown.
If not for the big man with the long nose, Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves would have stayed clear of trouble in Buckskin, a growing settlement on the stagecoach route angled across the Texas Panhandle toward the New Mexico Territory. Or maybe not. Trouble seemed to follow them. The two young drifters were in a saloon called the Red Queen, named for the card that won the place for its current owner when he drew it in a high-stakes poker game in Tascosa. That filled out the royal flush he was trying for, and the deed for this saloon in Buckskin was part of the pot he raked in. At the time, it bore the unimaginative name of Clancy's. The gambler, Thad Milton, changed it after riding into Buckskin, taking a look at his newly acquired property, and deciding it was time for him to settle down and become a saloon keeper. Milton improved the place quite a bit during his ownership. As a result, the Red Queen did more business than any of the other two dozen or so saloons in Buckskin. The bar was crowded when Matt and Sam strode in that evening, but they found places for themselves at the hardwood and ordered beers from the bald-aproned drink juggler. Both young men were big enough to attract some attention. Tall, broad-shouldered, lean-hipped, they had the look of natural-born fighting men. Matt wore a blue bib front shirt and a black Stetson tipped back casually on his dark brown hair. Twin Colts with smooth walnut grips rode in hand-tooled holsters attached to the gun belt around his hips. His blue eyes, usually mild, could turn to flint ice when he was angry. Sam sported a soft buckskin shirt, without all the fancy fringe dudes favored, and a flat-crowned brown hat the color of snuff. His hair was black as a raven's wing, That, along with the faintly reddish hue of his skin and the slightly prominent cheekbones, testify to his Cheyenne heritage. His father was the late Medicine Horse, a wise leader of his people who went east as a young man to obtain a white man's education. While at school, Medicine Horse met, fell in love with, and married a young white woman who became Sam's mother a few years later. Sam August Webster Two Wolves followed in his father's educational footsteps, attending an Eastern college. Matt Bodine's education was of the frontier sort and included a great deal of life experience to go along with a certain amount of book learning. The two young men were mostly inseparable friends since childhood. Matt, the son of a rancher who still owned one of the largest spreads in Montana, was welcomed into the Cheyenne tribe as Sam's blood brother. They were Onehomahon, brothers of the wolf. Brothers in their restless nature, too. Each owned a ranch of his own in Montana, smaller than the holdings of the elder Bodine, but still sizable and plenty lucrative. They could settle down on those spreads anytime. For the past several years, though, they indulged their wanderlust, traveling from one end of the West to the other and back several times. They were men who saw the elephant, but wanted to see more. The fella standing near them at the bar in the Red Queen had a nose almost long enough to qualify as an elephant's trunk, Matt thought. He knew to be polite, so he tried not to stare. But it was difficult. He couldn't remember ever seeing an hombre with such an enormous snout. Sam nudged him in the side with an elbow.
Yes, it's a prominent proboscis, but you're being rude, brother.
Yeah, I know.
He focused his attention on the beer in his mug. Folks couldn't help how they looked, and they hadn't ought to be the object of unwanted attention just because the good Lord blessed them with an abundance of whatever the hell it was, Sam called it. Besides, in addition to the big nose, the man had long, brawny arms and huge shoulders bulging with muscle. The rest of his face was craggy and weathered by the elements. A thick black mustache drooped over his lips. He wore a slouch hat, a shaggy buffalo coat, and tossed back several shots of whiskey since Matt and Sam entered the saloon. What Matt overheard of the man's loud-voiced conversation told Matt he was a hide hunter, a rugged breed of men, to be sure, a touchy breed, too. Matt didn't look away quick enough. The man turned his head and directed a dark, murderous glare in Matt's direction.
You looking at me, mister? See something funny, do you?
Not at all, friend.
Matt could be a mite proddy himself at times, but he wasn't looking for trouble. He remembered something in the Bible about how a soft answer turneth away wrath. He hoped the good book would prove to be right in this case. The buffalo hunter shouldered his way close enough for Matt to smell the reek of the raw whiskey on the man's breath. Close enough, Matt had a moment's worry about that spear of a nose poking one of his eyes out.
I think you were staring at me. I don't like it when folks stare at me. When they do, they start laughing at me, too.
I got no reason to laugh at you, mister.
No? What about my nose? Don't you think my nose is funny looking?
As a matter of fact, Matt thought the hombre's nose was a mite funny looking, but he wasn't going to say that.
Listen, I'm not looking for any trouble.
Well, then you shouldn't go around staring at folks like some sort of damn halfwit.
Matt was starting to get annoyed now himself. He ignored the warning look Sam threw at him.
If I offended you, mister, it wasn't my intention. Now, why don't you let my friend and me get back to our beers?
By God, he ain't another halfwit. He's a half-breed. His sort shouldn't even be in a saloon, let alone drinking with white men.
You'd better move along, mister. Just because I said we weren't looking for trouble doesn't mean we'll stand for any bullying.
That's mighty big talk for a man who spends his time with a filthy redskin.
A bearded man in greasy, beaded buckskins came up behind the buffalo hunter and tugged on the sleeve of the shaggy coat.
Better let it go, Buckner. I recognize that hombre. He's Matt Bodine.
Buckner knew the name of Matt Bodine. Most folks on the frontier did. Matt had a reputation for being mighty fast and accurate with those colts of his. Some said the only man slicker on the draw than Matt was Smoke Jensen. Others weren't sure who was quicker. Buckner's dander was up, though. He was too proud to back down, no matter who he faced. He scowled.
I ain't no gunfighter, Bodine. But if you ain't yellow,
You'll step outside in the street with me and we can settle this the way real men do. With fists.
Matt was ready to do just that, but Sam put a hand on his shoulder.
Forget it. It's not worth the time and trouble. Anyway, you don't want to get your knuckles bruised up on this fellow. His head's probably as hard as a rock.
Matt returned Buckner's glare for a second longer, then shrugged and turned away.
Yeah, you're probably right. It ain't worth it.
Matt reached for his beer. Buckner's eyes widened and bulged out until it seemed like they would pop right out of their sockets.
Now, by God, I'll put up with a lot of things.
Somehow Matt doubted that.
But being ignored ain't one of them.
Buckner grabbed Matt's shoulder and jerked the younger man around to face him. That was it. Buckner pushed things too far by laying hands on him. Buckner swung a huge fist. Matt ducked under it and bored in. Buckner shook off the effects of Matt's punches and took some more lumbering swipes. Matt couldn't avoid all the punches. One of them landed on his breastbone and slammed him against the bar. Buckner raised a fist high. It was poised to come down in a shattering, skull-crushing sledgehammer of a blow. Before it could fall, Sam's fist practically exploded in Buckner's face. Sam walloped the buffalo hunter on the nose and then delivered a stinging left cross to his jaw.
Hey! We're ganging up on Buckner!
The outraged shout came from the man in the buckskins who warned Buckner to back off a few moments earlier. He tackled Sam. The two men landed on a poker table, reducing it to kindling and bringing the game to an unanticipated end.
You son of a bitch! Oh! I was gonna win that hand!
Matt straightened and set himself. He ducked under another wild, leaping punch from Buckner, then peppered the buffalo hunter with a couple of jabs to the face. Both blows landed solidly and bent Buckner's already injured nose even farther out of shape. Buckner staggered back, clapping both hands to his wounded snout. He had quite a few friends in the saloon. The crowd surged forward, surrounding Matt and Sam. They weren't fighting on their own, however. As fists flew and furniture broke and bottle shattered, it became obvious the Red Queen's battling patrons were split into two roughly equal factions. On one side were the buffalo hunters, on the other, the cowboys who worked on the spreads established here in the panhandle the past few years as the vast herds of buffalo dwindled. Their dislike for each other was mutual. The few townies in the place pretty much stayed out of it. Some of them slunk toward the doors, hoping to get outside before the violence drew them in. Matt and Sam were trapped in the middle of the whirlwind of fists and feet and flying chairs. As they stood in front of the bar, they put their backs together and lashed out with punch after punch, decking everyone who came at them. A few feet away, several cowboys jumped on Buckner and tried to bring the massive buffalo hunter to the floor. Buckner shook them off like a bear shaking off a pack of curs. Then he picked up one of the overturned tables and charged forward, knocking down men and scattering them like ninepins. Blood still streamed from his nose. Matt saw him from the corner of his eye as he continued to fight. While he still didn't like Buckner, he couldn't help but feel grudging admiration for the buffalo hunter. Buckner was one hell of a fighting man. The epic struggle inside the Red Queen might have continued until the saloon was reduced to a shambles. Men froze with fists lifted to strike blows that never fell. Heads turned toward the doorway, where a man in a white shirt, black vest, black hat, and string tie had pushed through the bat wings to discharge one barrel of a greener into the ceiling. He lowered the shotgun so that it covered the brawlers.
The next man who throws a punch gets blown in half!
The light from the chandeliers hanging from the saloon ceiling glinted on the badge pinned to the newcomer's chest.
Now, by God, I want an honest answer to this question. Who started this damn ruckus?
Every eye in the place, other than their own, turned to look at Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves.
Wait just a damn minute. We didn't start this. He did.
You threw the first damn punch, Bodine.
Only because you grabbed me, you lummox.
Bodine. Not Matt Bodine.
That's right.
The sheriff, or marshal, or whatever he was, swung the greener so the twin barrels pointed directly at Matt and Sam.
Drop your guns.
Matt glanced over at his blood brother. While they bent the law from time to time in their wandering, neither of them made a habit of drawing on badge toters. They weren't owl hoots. They were just rambunctious.
All right, Sheriff. But you're making a mistake here. Sam and I ain't to blame for this.
It's Marshall. Marshall Harlan Stryker. And I don't make mistakes. That's why Buckskin is a peaceable town. At least it was until you two hellions rode in. It will be again, with the two of you safely behind bars.
Sam nodded toward Buckner.
The least you could do is arrest him, too. He was involved every bit as much as we were. More, since we tried to convince him we weren't looking for trouble.
Buckner pressed a hand against his broad chest and looked as innocent as a huge, burly, battle-scarred buffalo hunter could look.
Now that's a lie, Marshal. Them two come in here and started making fun of my nose. Ain't my fault it's so long I inherited from my pa. His nose was even longer.
Matt didn't see how that could be possible, and Buckner's innocent, offended tone got on his nerves.
Hell, break out the violins. Next thing you know, you'll be traipsing off through the daisies with little Nell.
Buckner squinted and balled up his fists.
Why, you son of a...
That's enough! You're not fooling me, Buckner. You caused plenty of trouble in the past, and we both know it. But Bodine and Two Wolves have a reputation as real hellraisers. You're just an amateur. So I'm going to give you a break this time, and not lock you up.
Buckner frowned, as if he didn't like being called an amateur hellraiser, and intended to argue the point. But he must have decided that was better than being thrown in jail, because he shrugged his massive shoulders.
I'm much obliged, Marshal. You got my word, I'll be as meek as a little lamb the rest of the time I'm here in town.
Stryker backed toward the bat wings and gestured with the shotgun.
Come on, you two. Follow me.
You really gonna lock us up?
Damn right I am.
Sam waved a hand to take in their surroundings. The saloon was somewhat worse for the wear and tear of the past few minutes.
We can pay for the damages if that will make a difference.
That was true. Money wasn't a problem for either of the two drifters. Their ranches in Montana were profitable, and Matt and Sam both had sizable bank accounts in Denver and Cheyenne. All it would take to cover the costs of repairing the saloon would be sending a couple of wires.
Yeah, just let us go down to the telegraph office.
There is no telegraph office in Buckskin. But don't worry, you'll pay for the damages, along with fines for assault and disturbing the peace. The circuit judge will be through in about a week. He'll determine the amount.
A week?
That's right. And I'm getting tired of flapping my gums. Move!
Unarmed and covered by the greener, Matt and Sam had no choice but to follow the marshal's orders. They could try to get close enough to jump Stryker and take the shotgun away from him, Matt thought. Or they could try to grab Colts from some of the other men in the saloon and shoot it out. But either of those moves was likely to result in innocent folks getting hurt, maybe killed. That just wasn't something the Blood Brothers wanted to be responsible for.
Maybe it won't be too bad. They'll have to give us 3 square meals a day. We'll just get some rest while we're waiting for the judge to arrive.
Yeah, but what if we don't have enough money to pay for the damages and those fines?
In that case, you'll work off your debt. I can't speak for the judge, but I reckon about 6 months of hard labor would be about right.
6 months? Why, you...
Sam's hand on his shoulder stopped him from saying anything more. Matt glared over at Sam.
Let's cut across the panhandle, you said. We won't run into any trouble there, you said. What could possibly go wrong, you said?
Things were about to go more wrong than either Matt Bodine or Sam Two Wolves, or anybody else in Buckskin, for that matter, could guess. About a mile north of the settlement, under the light of the stars and the rising moon, a large group of men sat on their horses and listened to their leader speak.
There's a bank, a freight company, a stagecoach station, and more than a dozen other businesses in Buckskin. The money in the bank is what we're really after, of course. But there should be plenty of other loot in town. Take what you want, but remember, don't start any fires until we're ready to ride out. We don't want the settlement burning down while we're still cleaning it out.
What about women, Deuce? Can we grab a few of them to take along?
Sure. You see a gal who strikes your fancy, bring her along. But get the money first. We're heading for Mexico, and there'll be plenty of pretty little señoritas there.
The 3 dozen hard-faced outlaws knew their business. A year of riding together ensured that.
A few members came and went, but most of them were experienced desperados, used to working with each other. They knew how to take orders from Deuce Mallory, too. Mallory was the one who put together the original gang. Numbering only 8 men, they started their string of robberies and killings in Missouri. Their depredations quickly grew to rival those of the James Gang, the Youngers, and the other groups of outlaws spreading terror across the frontier. Mallory was a canny leader. He picked his targets and planned his raids well. He was an educated man, the son of an Illinois storekeeper who worked hard to send his boy to college. But Edward had a wild streak in him. Though he was smart enough to handle his classes with ease, he was expelled for gambling and for betting the wife of one of his instructors. That wasn't written down on any of the official documents ending his college career. The cuckolded professor caught up to Edward Mallory before the young man could leave town, intending to give him a thrashing. Instead, Mallory beat the older man to death with his bare hands, ensuring he could never go home again. The shame of being kicked out of school was one thing. A murder charge hanging over his head was something else entirely. The whole sweep of the frontier awaited him, so Mallory took off for the tall and uncut. He found the life of a fugitive wasn't really bad. He picked up the nickname Deuce in Wichita when he bluffed his way to victory in a high-stakes poker game with only a pair of twos in his hand. Wichita was where he killed his second man, too, this time in a gunfight, so Mallory supposed the nickname was appropriate for that reason as well. Since then, he'd lost track of the number of men who fell to his gun. He didn't care about things like that. Notoriety didn't interest him nearly as much as money, whiskey, women, and cards. Not necessarily in that order. It just depended on his mood at the time. Now he looked over the men gathered in the moonlight.
All right, you know what to do. Kill as many as you can when we ride in. That'll shock the townspeople into not fighting back.
Even if they do, they won't stand a chance against us, Deuce. They won't hardly know what hit them.
Nope, but they'll sure as hell know they've been hit.
The killers rode on into Buckskin. Matt thought the clang of the cell door closing was a damned ugly sound. He glowered through the bars at Marshal Harlan Stryker, who stood outside the cell with the shotgun tucked under his arm and a self-satisfied smirk on his face. Stryker's deputy was a mild-looking little man he'd called Birdie.
You want me to go over to the cafe and get these boys something to eat, Marshal?
Nah, they probably had supper before they went to the Red Queen for their evening of drinking and brawling. If they didn't, well, it won't hurt them to go hungry until morning.
I'm going to tell the judge about the way you're treating us, Marshal.
Go right ahead. I think you'll find that Judge Farnsworth has as little patience for lawbreakers as I do. He's not going to take pity on you because you had to miss a meal.
The cell had 2 bunks in it, one along each of the stone walls at its sides. The marshal's office was a squat building, solidly built of stone blocks and thick timbers. The timbers must have been freighted in, because one thing the Texas Panhandle didn't have was big trees. Trees of any size were scarce up here.
You might as well stop arguing with the marshal, Matt. It's not going to do any good.
That's right, Two Wolves. You're the smarter of the pair, aren't you?
I wouldn't say that.
I'd say neither one of you is very smart, or you wouldn't be starting fights in saloons. Keep an eye on them, Birdie. I'm going to go make my evening rounds.
Yes, sir, Marshal. I sure will watch him.
Birdie fixed a beady-eyed, intimidating glare on the prisoners. That's what he seemed to be trying for anyway, but he was so harmless-looking, it didn't really work.
The marshal's gone now. Why don't you let us out of here, little fella? We didn't start that fight in the saloon, I swear.
You can tell your story to the judge. He'll be the one to decide whether or not you're telling the truth. If you fellas would like some coffee, I can put on a pot to boil.
That would be very nice, Deputy. Thank you.
Birdie nodded. Matt turned to Sam.
Why are you being so polite to that little weasel?
He's just doing his job, brother. I don't see any reason to hold that against him.
I hold it against anybody who has a hand in locking us up.
Shelby, come round my man.
Psst! Bugsy!
A voice sounded from the cell's single-barred window, set high in the rear wall. Matt and Sam looked at each other in surprise. They didn't know anybody in Buckskin. Who would be slipping up to the back of the jail to talk to them through the window? A large, sturdy bucket sat in the corner of the cell for prisoners to relieve themselves. Since it hadn't been used, or at least hadn't been used recently, Matt stood, picked it up, and upended it beneath the window. He started to step up onto it to look through the window, but Sam stopped him.
Wait a minute. We don't have any friends in these parts.
Yeah. Could be somebody who wants to slap me in the face with a bullet. Who's out there?
It's me, Buckner.
Matt and Sam exchanged a glance. The belligerent buffalo hunter was the last person they'd expect to come calling on them in jail.
If you're here to gloat about us being locked up...
No, it ain't that. I got to thinking, and it ain't right you and the Redskin have to take all the blame for what happened.
Sam stood up and moved over beside Matt under the window.
So you're going to find Marshal Stryker and tell him we shouldn't be locked up?
Hell no! Stryker wouldn't believe me anyway, and if he did, he'd just throw me in jail too. He ain't gonna let you go. He's a vain son of a bitch. He wants to be known as the lawman who brought Matt Bodine and Sam Two Wolves to heel.
So what are you gonna do?
Well, I got me a chain and a mule out here. I'm gonna bust you boys out.
Matt and Sam looked at each other again in the light from the lantern hanging in the hall outside the cells. Despite all the ruckuses they'd been mixed up in over the years, they weren't wanted anywhere. Their slate was clean as far as the law was concerned. That wouldn't be the case if Buckner helped them escape from jail. They would be fugitives, and rightly so, even though the charges that landed them behind bars to start with were bogus.
Forget it. You don't have to do that, Buckner.
But hell, if I don't, you'll be locked up for a week or more.
Yeah, but I don't want to spend the rest of my life looking over my shoulder for the law.
Well, you sure about that?
We're certain. If you really want to help, you can stay and testify at our trial.
Oh, shit, I can't hardly do that. There's buffalo waiting out there on the plains for me to shoot them. Look, it wouldn't take but a minute to yank them bars out.
Matt was about to tell Buckner again to forget about any escape attempt when he heard something else that caught his attention.
Hoofbeats. A lot of them. And they're coming closer.
Hear that, Buckner? A lot of riders are headed toward town. Could be trouble.
From somewhere out of the darkness, hell swallowed Buckskin. Excitement pounded in Deuce Mallory's chest as he led the charge into the settlement. He lived for these moments when he seized power in both hands and clasped it as tightly as he held the pair of Colts he used to fire left and right as he steered his horse with his knees. The power of fear, the power of life and death. It was like air to him, something he had to have to survive. When he was without it for too long, he began to feel his control slipping away. An old man with a white beard down to his chest gaped at the riders from the boardwalk. Without even slowing his horse, Mallory fired. An old woman came out of the building and screamed when she saw the body on the boardwalk. Mallory was almost past, but he twisted in the saddle and fired. A lot younger and prettier woman darted in front of Mallory's horse, trying desperately to reach the other side of the street for some reason. Mallory didn't know why that was so important to her, nor did he care. He never slowed his mount. Earlier in the day, a couple of Mallory's men rode into Buckskin, bought some supplies at one of the general stores, and memorized the layout of the town well enough so that when they returned to the gang, they were able to draw a crude town map. Because of that, Mallory knew where to find the bank. He veered his horse toward the red brick building now as the slaughter continued up and down the settlement's main street. Some of the outlaws dismounted and stormed into homes and businesses, looking for loot and killing anyone who got in their way. Mallory didn't hesitate as he neared the boardwalk in front of the bank. More of the outlaws followed through Mallory's opening. One of them carried a lit lantern illuminating the darkened bank. Mallory pointed to a door on the far side of the lobby.
The vault must be through there!
His men had dynamite with them. They were experts with explosives. Mallory recruited them for that very purpose. The rest of the men arranged themselves at the shattered window and the double front doors of the bank. They held rifles and were ready to defend the place if the local law or even the citizens attempted to storm the bank while the outlaws were inside. Mallory didn't expect that to happen.
I'll leave it with you, boys. Clean out the vault and rendezvous south of town.
Some of the buildings down the street were on fire now, torched by his men when they finished looting the places.
Those flames would spread and might even consume the town. Mallory didn't care if Buckskin burned to the ground as long as he got what he wanted. Right now, he wanted to deal out some more punishment to the settlement's citizens, those boring, lifeless drones who were everything he despised. Their mere existence was an affront to him. He wanted to kill all of them, and he would start with the local law. Convinced now Buckner's visit wasn't a trick of some sort, Matt jumped on top of the bucket when the shooting started. That brought him up high enough so he could grab the iron bars and peer out the window. There wasn't much to see. The window looked out on the alley behind the jail. Matt saw a massive looming shape in the alley. Buckner. A few yards away was another even bigger patch of darkness. The mule Buckner brought along to pull the bars out of the window.
What the hell? Sounds like a damn war just broke out.
Must be outlaws raiding the town.
He saw the buffalo hunter turn away.
Hey, Buckner! Come back here!
I gotta find out what that ruckus is. They can't have a fight without me, goddamn.
Blast it, Buckner! Hey! Maybe you better get us out of here after all!
Matt's shouts didn't do any good. Buckner lumbered down the alley, turned a corner, and was gone. Matt hopped down from the bucket and looked at his blood brother.
He's gone! What do we do now?
There's nothing we can do. We're trapped in here. Our only choice is to wait it out.
Sam's words made sense, but that didn't do Matt any good. Like Buckner must have, he felt the call of battle. The shooting and the yelling were like physical tugs on him. He wanted to be right in the middle of whatever fracas was going on. The door between the cell block and the marshal's office was flung open. Stryker stood there, his shotgun clutched in his hands. Birdie was with him.
Get in the cell block and lock the door.
I ought to come with you, Marshal.
We have a duty to protect the prisoners. I'll deal with those raiders.
Matt had to give the lawman credit for being brave, or downright crazy. Stryker was going out to face the killers alone, and from the sound of the attack, there were a lot of them. Stryker would be facing overpowering odds.
Marshal! Let us out of here and give us guns. We'll help you.
Forget it. You're locked up and you'll stay that way. I don't need help from the likes of you two.
It sounds to me like you do, Marshal. There must be a lot of those outlaws.
Marshal, maybe it'd be a good idea.
Follow my orders, deputy. Get in there and protect the prisoners.
Birdie sighed and gave a reluctant nod. He stepped into the cell block and pulled the door closed behind him, while Stryker headed for the front door of the office.
There goes a mighty brave man.
Or a damn foolish one. Deputy, show some sense. What's going on out there? Is it an outlaw raid?
That's what it looked like. I saw a bunch of men on horseback before Marshal Stryker hustled me in here. They came charging into town, shooting at everything that moved. I ain't seen anything like it since Gettysburg.
It was hard to imagine the mousy-looking little deputy taking part in the Battle of Gettysburg. Matt supposed there were all types in the armies of North and South.
If you release us, deputy, we promise to help fight off the attack on the town.
You know I can't do that, even if I wanted to. The marshal gave me strict orders to keep you boys in here.
He's gonna get himself killed if he's not dead already. That means you're in charge, Birdie. Let us out and give us our guns back. You know we can help.
For a second, Matt thought Birdie was going to do it. But then the deputy gave a stubborn shake of his head.
Nope, I just can't. But don't worry, I won't let anything happen to you fellas.
Matt and Sam exchanged a glance. If the raiders wanted to break in here, Birdie wouldn't be able to stop them. The idea they might be gunned down like helpless animals made their skin crawl and their souls cry out in protest. Neither Matt nor Sam was particularly afraid of dying, but they wanted to go out on their feet, guns in their hands, fighting to the last breath. It was starting to look like they might not get the chance. Mallory knew where the marshal's office was, just as he knew the location of the bank. As he spurred toward the squat stone building, the flames shot higher in the air at the other end of town, throwing a hellish red glare over the street and lighting up practically the whole settlement. In the glare, Mallory saw the marshal emerge from his office. A couple of owl hoots were closer to him than Mallory. The marshal swung his shotgun up and fired both barrels. The buckshot slammed into the outlaws and their horses at close range, shredding flesh, knocking the horses down, driving the men out of their saddles. The horses kicked a little before dying, but neither of the raiders moved at all. The marshal tried to reload. Mallory was almost on top of him by then. Flame lanced from the barrel of his revolver. The bullet knocked the marshal halfway around and made him drop the shotgun. He caught himself against one of the poles supporting the awning over the boardwalk and clawed with his other hand at the Colt on his hip. Smiling, Mallory fired again before the marshal could clear leather. This slug drove the lawman backwards, but he still didn't fall. Even with two bullets in his body, he managed to stumble forward, haul his pistol out of its holster, and struggle to raise the gun. Mallory grinned at the marshal.
You are one stubborn son of a bitch, aren't you, Batch Toter? I think I'm gonna put this one right between your eyes.
The marshal's pain-racked face contorted with the effort he was making, but his muscles just wouldn't work well enough anymore. Still grinning, Mallory waved some of his men over.
Get in there! Kill anybody else you find and take all the guns and ammunition!
He spotted one of the dynamite men riding past. They must have finished down at the bank, but with all the commotion, Mallory didn't hear the blast when the vault door blew off.
Brody! When they get through cleaning out the marshal's office, toss a couple of sticks of dynamite in there!
Will do, boss!
Mallory rode on down the street, the flames of Hades rising into the night sky behind him. Birdie appeared to grow more nervous. Matt was about to try again to convince the deputy to release him and Sam when the outer door of the office slammed open. Birdie didn't wait for the raiders to come in. A changed man, he threw open the cell block door. He stood straighter, the nervous look gone from his face. His eyes glittered like deadly points of fire, the gun in his hand rock steady.
Eat lead, you dirty owl hoots!
Matt and Sam both dove to the floor of the cell, knowing the raiders would return fire. That happened, but Birdie's daring attack surprised the outlaw so much, he was able to cut down a couple of them before they began shooting back. Birdie was jarred by a bullet, but managed to stay on his feet by leaning against the door jamb while the revolver in his hand continued to spout flame. The deputy was hit again, and this time it was too much for him to withstand. He sagged to his knees. Half a dozen outlaws entered the marshal's office. Three of them were down, but the other three closed in on Birdie, ready to blast him to pieces. A broken-nosed mountain of a man appeared behind them and came crashing down on them. Buckner knocked all three of the outlaws off their feet. As he landed on top of them, the buffalo hunter grabbed two men by the neck and slammed their heads together. Buckner hammered a fist down on the back of the third man's head. The air was thick with roiling clouds of powder smoke, but through the open door between the office and the cell block, Matt saw several more outlaws charge in from the street.
Buckner, look out!
Buckner pushed himself up and swung around, but not in time to stop the raiders from opening fire. Bullet after bullet tore through his buffalo coat and thudded into his huge frame. He rushed the raiders. With blood running down his hand like a river, he reached under his coat and yanked an Arkansas toothpick from its sheath. More blood sprayed into the air as he waded into the men with a knife slashing back and forth. Those who escaped the deadly arcs of the long, heavy blade went down under the bone-shattering blows of Buckner's other fist. Despite this last, ferocious attack, Buckner suffered too much damage to stay on his feet for long. He fell to his knees, taking the last of the outlaws in the marshal's office down with him. His sausage-like fingers closed around the man's neck and squeezed. The outlaw thrashed wildly, but couldn't get free of Buckner's death grip. He didn't strangle, though, because with one last convulsive heave, the buffalo hunter snapped his neck like a matchstick. After a moment, one of the men wounded by Birdie groaned and forced himself upright. He reached under his coat and brought out a small bundle of some sort. Matt and Sam both watched, their eyes widening with horror as they recognized the bundle as two sticks of dynamite tied together. With a savage grin at the prisoners, he tossed the dynamite through the open cell block door and staggered out of the marshal's office.
Son of a bitch!
The sticks came to a stop about halfway to the cell and lay there as the fuse continued to sputter and spark. Sam threw himself at the bars and extended his right arm between them as he sprawled on the floor. His fingers wiggled as they reached desperately for the dynamite. If he could get his hands on it, he might be able to toss it back into the outer office. If he could do that, at least the explosive cylinders would be a little farther away when they detonated. But Sam's attempt came up a few inches short.
I can't get it.
He lunged ahead, but couldn't reach the dynamite.
Come on back against the rear wall. We'll pull those mattresses off the bunks and prop them in front of us.
Even as Matt spoke, he knew what he proposed wasn't likely to do much good. The cell wasn't big enough. The mattresses were filled with corn shucks or something like that. They wouldn't stop the force of the blast. Sam ignored Matt's warning and made another try for the dynamite. The tips of his fingers barely brushed the red cylinders. At that moment, Birdie rolled onto his side and groaned. His shirt and vest were sodden with blood, but he wasn't dead. His eyelids fluttered open. For a second, his eyes didn't seem to want to focus. Then horrified understanding came into them as he saw the dynamite. Matt and Sam watched in fascination, knowing they might have only seconds to live. There was nothing they could do to help as Birdie reached out with a shaking hand. He pushed himself toward the dynamite with his other hand and his feet. The fuse had about an inch left to burn when the deputy's fingers finally closed around the sticks. Birdie pushed himself up and heaved the dynamite toward the door into the office. The dynamite sailed through the opening, landed on the floor, and rolled to the side. Matt couldn't hear anything over the ringing in his ears and suspected Sam was experiencing the same thing. Gradually, Matt became aware debris wasn't slamming into him anymore. The earth stopped shaking. They were alive. He didn't know how badly he was hurt, but he didn't care right now. He just wanted to know if Sam was alive.
Sam! Sam, where are you? Are you all right?
He felt around, and after a moment, his hands fell on the sleeve of a buckskin shirt. He followed the arm in the sleeve up to Sam's head. Sam wasn't moving, but Matt found a pulse beating steadily in his neck. Relief washed through him. His blood brother was alive. The rear wall of the jail seemed to be intact. Matt lifted Sam and propped him in a sitting position against it. The air was beginning to clear. Matt made out Sam's face. It was bruised and scraped, but Sam didn't appear to have any serious injuries. Matt took stock of his own situation and decided he was all right. His arms and legs worked, and he wasn't bleeding except from some cuts and scratches. His hearing was coming back, too. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been able to hear Sam groaning as he struggled to regain consciousness. Looking around the cell, Matt saw that the force of the explosion sprang the door open. Some of the bars were bent out of shape. Matt gazed past them and saw part of the wall between the office and the cell block was down. A hand and part of an arm stuck out from under the pile of rubble.
Birdie!
Matt crawled to the door and grabbed the bars to pull himself upright. He stumbled out of the cell. Working as fast as he could, he uncovered the deputy's head and shoulders. Matt got his hands under Birdie's arms and hauled him out from under the collapsed wall. Birdie was covered with blood, but he was alive. He opened his eyes again as Matt pillowed the deputy's head against his leg.
Did I get that dynamite out of here in time?
You sure did. You saved me and Sam, no doubt about it. Saved our lives.
Good. That was what the marshal told me to do.
Matt wondered briefly what happened to Stryker. He would have bet a hat the lawman was dead by now. Lots of folks in Buckskin were probably dead. Matt realized the shooting had stopped outside. The raiders were probably gone. He heard the crackle of flames and shouts of alarm, though. The town was on fire. The bastards torched it, Matt thought.
You made it, brother.
Yeah.
Birdie?
He's alive. There's no right to be, but he is.
Matt jerked his head toward what was left of the office.
See about Buckner if you feel up to it.
Buckner's dead. I have a hunch he was gone before that dynamite ever went off. Those bastards must have put 20 slugs in him. It's a wonder he lived as long as he did.
Give me a hand with Birdie here. We need to get him to a dock.
With Sam's help, Matt got to his feet. He cradled Birdie's limp form in his arms. The little deputy didn't weigh much, and under normal circumstances, Matt could have carried him without any trouble. These circumstances were hardly normal, though, and Matt stumbled a little as he made his way out of the destroyed marshal's office. Sam's strong hand on his arm steadied him. They emerged onto the street, where the air was clogged not with dust from the explosion, but rather with smoke from the burning buildings. Most of the places ablaze were at the far end of town, but the flames were spreading. Matt saw people with buckets of water running back and forth as they tried frantically to contain the conflagration. They might succeed. It was too soon to say. Lifeless bodies littered the street. Men, women, and children, old-timers, horses and mules. The slaughter was wholesale. The raiders truly killed anything that moved, including Marshal Harlan Stryker. Sam pointed out the lawman's body to Matt. Stryker lay on his back with a bullet hole between his eyes. Sam grabbed the arm of a man running past and shouted,
"Where's the doctor? We need a doctor!"
The man turned his wide-eyed gaze toward Sam, pulled free, and stumbled backward, drawing his gun as he did.
You're one of those prisoners! I bet you're one of those outlaws, too! Help! Help me, somebody! I got two of the outlaws! They killed the deputy! Help!
Men heard the frantic shouts and began running toward them. Guns came out. Matt and Sam looked at each other, knowing they were right back in danger. If the battle-shocked townies took the Blood Brothers for members of the gang, they would probably open fire, too eager to strike back at the varmints who had inflicted such damage on the settlement to even think about what they were doing. Matt and Sam were still unarmed, even if they could have brought themselves to open fire on innocent people. But a panic-stricken citizen could shoot them just as dead as any owl could. The rendezvous point was about a mile south of town where a dry creek bed cut across the plains. The stream had water in it just often enough to support a few scrubby mesquite trees with deep roots along its banks. Mallory's men paused there to let everyone catch up as they left the devastated settlement of Buckskin. The flames shooting high in the air from the burning buildings were clearly visible from here. The terrain in this part of the panhandle was so flat, the fire was probably visible for 20 miles or more. Deuce Mallory sat and watched the dancing flames with a satisfied grin on his raw-boned face. Those flames represented his vengeance on everybody who ever frowned at him in disapproval and tried to mold him into something he wasn't, going all the way back to his stern, straight-laced storekeeper father and his simpering fool of a mother. The gang took a lot of loot from Buckskin. That made Mallory's grin even wider. The men given the chore of cleaning out the bank vault carried away several large burlap bags full of greenbacks, along with a heavy canvas pouch stuffed to the gills with gold double eagles. Other men plundered the cash from the general stores and the settlement's other businesses. They stole money and jewelry from the families of Buckskin's finest homes. They stole something else from a few of those homes, wives and daughters. Mallory estimated the gang had half a dozen terrified female captives, ranging from teenaged girls up to middle-aged but still attractive married women. Taking prisoners like that was a double-edged sword. The men liked to have their fun with the gals, of course, but losing their womenfolk sometimes made the survivors of a raid more determined to pursue the gang. That was why Mallory would order the women released after a day or two. Killing the prisoners and leaving their bodies behind would just make the pursuers more determined than ever to catch up and try to avenge their loved ones. He didn't want that. Besides, he enjoyed knowing from then on those damn storekeepers would never be able to look at their wives and daughters again without thinking about all the men who'd ridden them. Hell, some of them would probably even give birth to outlaw babies. One of his lieutenants, a straw-haired man named Larrabee, moved his horse over next to Mallory's.
Everybody's here is gonna be, boss.
How many did we lose?
I make it 8. Some of them are dead for sure, and others ain't showed up, so I reckon they probably are, too.
It was a hard and fast rule. Anybody who didn't show up for the rendezvous in a timely manner got left behind. Mallory enforced it without exception.
All right, we'll head for the Dutchman's and count up the take there before moving on south.
Mexico's still where we're headed in the long run.
It's a good place to spend some time while things cool off up here. Warm weather and former señoritas, eh, Larrabee?
Whatever you say, boss.
Mallory looked coldly at the burning settlement as he turned his horse to head south and again felt that fierce sense of satisfaction at the visible evidence of the destruction he'd caused.
I say go to hell, each and every one of you.
Matt and Sam found themselves staring down the barrels of at least half a dozen guns as some of the citizens of Buckskin rushed up in response to the man's cries for help.
Kill the owl hoot!
Shoot him! Fill him full of lead!
No! String him up!
I say we blast the bastards!
Finally, a voice of reason spoke up.
Hold your fire! If you go to shooting, you might hit Birdie!
Yeah, a necktie party'd be better.
One of the men squinted over his gun barrel at Matt.
Give us a deputy, mister! You won't get away with holding him hostage!
The anger building up inside Matt finally exploded.
You damn fools! We're not holding the deputy hostage! We want to get him to a doctor!
And we aren't part of the gang that raided the town. They tried to kill us, too. They dynamited the marshal's office, for God's sake.
The stubborn looks remained on the faces of the townspeople.
They probably blew up the place trying to break you out because you're in cahoots with them.
Hand over the deputy, or we'll shoot anyway. I think Birdie's already dead.
As if the deputy heard, he stirred suddenly. Lifting his head, he peered around. The flames made it plenty light enough in the street to see what was going on. Although weak and thin, Birdie's voice still held some of the fighting spirit he displayed inside the jail.
Put those damn guns down. Bodine and Two Wolves are trying to help me.
Birdie, you're alive.
Thanks to these two men.
We thought they were part of the gang.
Well, they ain't.
Birdie looked up at Matt.
The marshal.
Dead.
Birdie closed his eyes for a second, then opened them and went on.
I reckon I'm in charge then. You men back off. The prisoners are still in my custody.
Birdie was in no shape to have anybody in custody, but Matt didn't think it was a good time to point that out. Instead, he turned to the group who were now looking confused and even a little ashamed of themselves.
Where's the doctor?
I saw him a few minutes ago in front of the hardware store. Come on, I'll show you.
They formed a grim procession as they went down the street, with Matt and Sam in front, along with the man taking them to the doctor and the rest of the townies trailing behind. Most of them holstered their guns, but a few still held their weapons as if they weren't ready to fully trust the Blood Brothers. The doctor was no longer in front of the hardware store, but one of the men spotted him farther down the street and pointed him out to Matt. The Sawbones was a gaunt, white-haired man with a harried look on his face. No surprise there, Buckskin was now full of injured people needing his attention. The doctor was checking over a line of wounded citizens laid out on the hotel porch. He glanced at Matt, saw the bloody figure in the young man's arms, and grunted.
Put him down somewhere, I'll get to him when I can. Birdie?
Howdy, Doc.
Bring him over here, set him down carefully. Yeah, just like that.
Matt lowered Birdie to the hotel porch. The doctor pulled aside the bloody shirt to reveal the bullet holes in Birdie's torso.
No telling how much damage those slugs did, but it looks like they went all the way through him anyway. Lost a lot of blood. I'll do what I can for him, but I'm only one man. A lot of people are hurt.
Perhaps I could help.
You have medical training, young man?
No, but I have a lot of practical experience patching up bullet holes.
Some of the less seriously injured patients are down at the far end of the porch. If you go see what you can do for them, I'd appreciate it.
Right away, Doctor.
Matt turned to the stunned citizens.
Anybody know who is responsible for this?
They looked at each other and shook their heads.
We don't have any idea, mister.
Never saw him before. And I don't know if anybody got a good look at him anyway. The way they rode in shooting and killing like that, folks were just trying to get out of harm's way.
Matt nodded. He understood what the men were talking about. In the middle of a battle like that, people didn't worry about anything beyond survival.
Oh, God! They took her!
Matt swung around to see what was happening now. A middle-aged man in a dressing gown over a nightshirt came stumbling up to the hotel. He must have already retired for the evening when the marauders charged into Buckskin. His thinning hair was standing up in crazy tufts, and his pale face was twisted with horror.
They took her! They took my Lucinda!
The doctor stepped over to him and grasped his arm.
Are you hurt, Mayor?
The man shook his head.
No, I'm fine. Didn't you hear me? Those bastards carried off my wife.
Matt looked over at one of the townsmen who stood nearby.
That fella's your mayor?
Yeah, Timothy Lowell's his name. From what he's saying, it sounds like those owl hoots kidnapped his wife. Mrs. Lowell's a fine-looking woman.
Are any other women or girls missing?
Mister, I just wouldn't know. I'm a bachelor myself. Reckon maybe that's a good thing tonight.
Matt figured the hombre was probably right about that. The possibility the outlaws carried off some of the women of Buckskin came as no real surprise to him. The outlaws were worse than animals. Somebody needed to stop them. These folks couldn't do it, though. Matt wasn't sure they could muster a posse to go after the raiders. A lot of men died, others were wounded, and the ones who remained had their hands full trying to get fires under control and care for the injured. Anyway, a bunch of storekeepers and clerks wouldn't be any match for a gang of ruthless hard cases who would as soon kill a man as look at him. The job of going after those outlaws required men who were pretty tough and gun handy themselves. At the moment, Matt could think of only two hombres in Buckskin who fit that description. They were Onihomahan, Matt and Sam, brothers of the wolf. By morning, the fires were out in the settlement. Four buildings burned to the ground, and a dozen others were heavily damaged by flames, including some residences. 23 people were dead, not counting the outlaws who died in the fighting, and another 7 or 8 were injured so badly Dr. Lloyd Fentress didn't expect them to pull through. One of the survivors was Deputy Bertie Phillips. Fentress sent word to Matt and Sam that Bertie wanted to see them. They had stayed up all night, helping with the wounded and fighting the fires. Their faces were grim with smoke, sweat, and dried blood, and their steps weary with exhaustion as they climbed the stairs to the second floor of the hotel, which was now a makeshift hospital. They poked around in the rubble of the marshal's office and jail until they found their hats, but they hadn't located their guns yet. Dr. Fentress met them at the top of the stairs and pointed to a door down the corridor.
Bertie's in room 11. I told him he needed to rest instead of talking to you fellas, but he insisted.
Is he going to recover from his wounds?
I'm a physician, not a gypsy fortune teller. But I'll say this, Bertie shouldn't have lived this long. I've stopped the bleeding and cleaned and bandaged the wounds. Little varmint's a stubborn, I'd say he's got a chance.
Thanks, Doc. We'll try not to tire him out too much.
You boys look like you could use some rest yourselves.
That'll have to wait.
They went down the hall and through an open door into the room where Bertie waited, halfway propped up in the hotel bed. Thick bandages were wrapped tightly around his body. His face was pale and drawn, but his eyes were open, and he seemed alert enough.
Are you fellas all right?
Might banged up and mighty tired, but other than that, I don't reckon we can complain.
Looks like you came through that dynamite blast pretty good.
Thanks to you. If you hadn't thrown those sticks out, we all would have been blown to Kingdom Come.
Yeah, as it is, it feels like the whole world fell on me.
Not the whole world, just a wall.
And it must have been you two dragged me out of there and got help for me. You saved my life.
The least we could do.
Not hardly. Not after the way the Marshal locked you up when that brawl in the Red Queen wasn't your fault.
You know that?
I figured as much. Buckner started a fight every time he came to town. Marshal Stryker knew that. He just wanted to be the one who locked up the famous Bodine and Two Wolves.
You knew that, but you didn't do anything about it?
What could I do? I worked for Marshal Stryker. And he was a good lawman, too, don't you think he wasn't? He was just, ambitious.
It's all right. Don't tire yourself out, Bertie. We promised the doctor we wouldn't upset you.
I ain't upset with you boys. I just hate to think about what those no-good outlaws have done to my town. Doc Fentress says they kidnapped some women.
5 that we know of, including Mayor Lowell's wife.
My God. Somebody's got to go after him.
You think anybody in this town is capable of tracking down an outlaw gang like that?
Nobody who lives here. But you two boys could do it. I've heard plenty about you fellas. You fought owl hoots and got mixed up in range wars and even helped out the Texas Rangers a time or two.
Maybe you should call in the Rangers now.
That'd mean sending a rider to the nearest telegraph office, and that's more than 40 miles away. By the time any Rangers could get here, those owl hoots would be long gone and their trail would be cold. Now, though, it'd be fresh enough for somebody to follow it.
Somebody meaning us?
Matt already thought the same thing himself, but he was reluctant to agree with what Bertie was asking. The odds against him and Sam would be overwhelming. Of course, that didn't stop them in the past. They rode right into some dust-ups where they might as well have been charging Hades with a bucket of water, and they made it out alive.
You can have the best horses in town, and if you need guns and ammunition, take whatever you need from Lowell's Emporium.
Owned by the mayor, I reckon.
That's right. I've already talked to him about this. He told me to deputize you and tell you the town will pay whatever you ask if you can get those prisoners away from the gang. Pay you a bounty for every one of those bastards you kill, too.
You're the marshal now?
That's right. Assuming I don't die from getting shot full of holes.
Matt didn't think that was going to happen. Birdie might look like a mousy little fella, but he demonstrated he was tough as wine leather.
I'd bet you a hat you'll pull through. We ain't deputies, though, and we ain't bounty hunters.
But there's nobody else who can do it.
Matt and Sam looked at each other. Sam shrugged.
I don't like the idea they carried those ladies off like that. It's like the rape of the Sabine women from Greek mythology. I read about it in Bullfinch.
Matt didn't know where Bullfinch was and didn't care.
I don't much cotton to varmints who try to blow me up, either.
Then you'll do it?
Keep your badges. We'll go after the bastards, but we don't need any 10 stars to do it.
We'll take you up on the offer of some extra horses and guns and ammunition, though. And enough supplies to keep us going for a while.
Take whatever you need. I'm sure the mayor will agree.
Did anybody see what direction those outlaws headed when they rode out of town?
I was told they rode south.
South it is, then. Give us an hour or so to get ready, and then we'll hit the trail.